Thanks for listening to the Best of Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
This is the Best of the Herd with Colin Cowherd on Fox Sports Radio.
Ah, here we go, live in Los Angeles. We love our Wednesdays. We get fed. I get Joel Klatt. I get Nick Wright. It's the Herd in L.A., wherever you may be and however you may be listening. iHeartRadio, Fox Sports Radio, FS1. I tried something new, Joy Taylor, yesterday.
What's that?
You know, I don't know if it was good for me physically, but right before bed, I had a giant brownie.
Oh, I saw you tweeted about that.
I went right to bed.
And who has brownies?
Lexi made some brownies.
Oh, okay.
And I got to tell you something. I woke up this morning. Energy. Had a lot of energy, Joy. It's my new thing.
A brownie before bed.
A gigantic
bed, huh?
Brownie right before bed. I think I'm on to something, Joy.
There are really few things in life that can completely derail me, like a brownie or a really well-made cupcake. I can't say no to either of those.
Well, I did not say no. It is great to have you in today. We got a packed show, obviously. The Herd brought to you by Jersey Mike Subs. Be a sub above. So, whether it happens or not, I'm reading this morning. This is the latest breaking news on Deshaun Watson, who's a Pro Bowl level quarterback. We know it's never been more of a quarterback league. I know a lot of people are saying, why are you talking about it? It hasn't happened yet. Because a lot of people I trust are saying now it's Miami, Deshaun, they've agreed to terms. Now, it doesn't mean it'll happen. Miami, Ross, the owner, wants to get resolution on some legal stuff. But Carolina's out. Miami and the Houston Texans have agreed to terms, draft picks, and all that stuff. And from what you read, they didn't have to give up nearly as much for Deshaun Watson if he did not have a mess legally staring him in the face. But this is what's interesting about this, is that when you're young, they call it a kingmaker. When you're young in any field, you're a young football coach, you're a young broadcaster, you're in politics, you're at a law firm, you need a kingmaker. You need somebody that believes in you. Because when you're young, your career is kind of turbulent and you make more mistakes and you know what I mean? Like you don't dress as good as everybody else and I didn't have any money and I look crappy in a cheap tie and you need somebody that believes in you. And it's very interesting in Miami, whether or not the Deshaun Watson thing happens, Tua's officially not it in Miami. It's too public. Miami, they know, everybody knows. And here's what's fascinating. Tua's been given 13 starts for a rebuilding team, right? We don't think this is a complete team. It's a rebuilding team. Here are his numbers. 66% completion percentage. Almost a 90 passer rating. 18 TDs, 19 picks. Zach Wilson would die for those. Justin Fields would die for those. Daniel Jones in his first 13 starts would die for those. So, like, they're bailing on him? And by the way, they probably bailed 7 starts ago. Why? Number one is, he never got any momentum. The injuries, said he didn't know the playbook. He never got any momentum. It's also an impatient owner. Justin Herbert and Joe Burrow make him look, you know, kind of below average. The GM and the head coach have an impatient owner. They got to win now. But here's something I think is undervalued in all of this. Josh Allen at Buffalo. That Josh Allen is so tremendously gifted that Miami's coaches, Brian Flores is a defensive coach. He's faced Josh Allen at Buffalo 5 times. He's 0-5. He's been blown out 4 times. And Josh Allen has carved up his defenses. And the NFL is getting increasingly quarterback reliant. And Brian Flores is a defensive coach and says, I can't face that 2 times a year with Tua. And it reminds me, I remember when LeBron James and Carmelo Anthony came into the NBA the first year. Now, LeBron was out of high school and Carmelo was out of college. So Carmelo's offensive game was a little more sophisticated at that point. And the King games weren't on much, but I can remember it was year 2 or year 3. It was not the first year. It was year 2 or year 3. And they were both. I mean, Carmelo was crushing it in Denver, and LeBron was a phenom, right? But there were people arguing, like, cause Carmelo was really turning the Nuggets around. And I watched them play a game. The Cavs played Denver and I happened to watch a half of it. And even though they both played well, when you put them side by side, it was like, oh, this is not close. This is not close. LeBron's way more athletic, way better defensive player, a bizarrely great passer at like 21 years old. And everybody was like, if you watched them separately, Carmelo's an all-star, LeBron's great. When you put them on the floor together, it was like, okay, I know they just both scored 30. This is not close. And I think that is a big part of this, is that when you Tua, you see him, and then there's Josh Allen. Remember, Josh Rosen in Arizona only got 13 starts too. And in those 13 starts, he was on the same field as Aaron Rodgers, Mahomes, and Russell Wilson. And when you put those guys on the field with Josh Rosen, and by the way, Aaron Rodgers didn't even play particularly well against him, but he made throws Josh can't, and Mahomes made throws he can't, and Russell moved around like Josh can't. And I think a big part of this is it's one thing to struggle. It's one thing to be a little small and not athletic. But I think the Josh Allen factor is a real thing. In fact, whenever you're up against greatness, it shrinks people. I mean, do you know how many coaches have been fired in the SEC since Nick Saban arrived? Like 70. It's insane. I mean, Les Miles was winning 10 games a year and they got rid of him. Why? Because, God, he looked bad when LSU would beat everybody in that conference. God, did he look bad against Saban. And everybody's like, I can't do it. By the way, Auburn's guy. Auburn runs through coaches. They do fine. It's just not against Saban. And so when you have great and you put it up against it, same field, same conference, it shrinks everybody. Tua's numbers are not terrible. 13 starts is fairly inconclusive. But they've officially moved off him. And they're willing to risk it potentially with Deshaun Watson with all sorts of legal problems. Why? Because they feel like if you put Deshaun Watson on the same field with Josh Allen, you got a shot. It physically feels like you got a shot. Two great playmakers. I want to talk about Mike Tomlin. So Mike Tomlin yesterday came fairly unglued when he was asked about the USC job. And it, by the way, I'm not blaming anybody that put Mike Tomlin's name out there for the USC job. I mean, USC swinging for the fences, and that doesn't bother me. But Mike Tomlin was very, very upset about it, and I want to play the reaction. I know you've already heard it, but I want to play it one more time.
Hey, guys, I don't have time for that speculation. I mean, that's a joke to me. I got one of the best jobs in all of professional sport. Why would I have any interest in coaching college football? That'll be the last time that I address it. And not only today, but moving forward. Never say never, but never. Okay? Anybody else got any questions about any college jobs? There's not a booster with a big enough blank check.
Anyone else? All right.
Thank you. Anybody asking Sean Payton about that? You know, anybody asking Andy Reid about stuff like that?
And that was the interesting part. Because I went to my Twitter account, and people were like, well, what is he saying? What is he saying there when he says Sean Payton and Andy Reid, both who I love? I'll tell you what he's saying. Exactly what he said. Well, why don't you bring up Sean Payton and Andy Reid? Andy Reid, Sean Payton, and Mike Tomlin all have one Super Bowl. One. Andy Reid's winning percentage is 62%. Sean Payton's is 64%. Uh-oh, Mike Tomlin's is 65%. Well, what about division titles? Well, since Mike Tomlin came into the NFL in 2007, Andy's got six, Sean's got six. Oops, Mike has seven. Mike Tomlin's saying, why aren't you bringing them up? I don't understand it. By the way, Sean Payton, lower winning percentage, had a better quarterback. Breeze is a much better quarterback historically. I think he holds half the records in the NFL over Big Ben. Andy's got Patrick Mahomes. Ben's not close. Is the media guilty of undervaluing Mike Tomlin? I'm guilty of this, by the way. I'm very guilty of this. I tend to glorify the offensive head coaches. Sean McVay walks in the league. I got stars in my eyes. And then Kyle Shanahan comes in and like, Kyle Shanahan. And then Sean McDermott could be better than both. He's a defensive guy, and I'm like, yeah, there's a guy in Buffalo. Offense, attracts us, right? Like McVay, the scheme's crazy. It looks different. We tend to, all of us, kind of really love, outside of Belichick, we all just embrace the offensive guys, not the defensive guys. But what Mike Tomlin is saying is exactly what he said. Why don't you bring up the other guys? And here's where Mike Tomlin has had to deal with something that I don't think's ever been discussed. One of the beliefs, the other day when I was on this call with Tom Brady and a bunch of reporters, somebody brought this up. I forget who it is. I apologize. Somebody brought it up. It was a good point. They say the toughest players to coach in football are aging star quarterbacks. Jimmy Johnson and Dan Marino, great example. Big Ben, the last 3.5 years, and this needs to be noted, has been awful. 3.5 years is not a short period of time in the NFL. A coach gets 2 years. If he doesn't win, he's fired. In 3.5 years, Big Ben is 20th in completion percentage, 21st in passer rating. Do you realize that's including all the rookie quarterbacks the last 3.5 years? That's bad. And there's no succession plan. And Ben is high maintenance and a lot of drama. So when people say, well, what is Mike Tomlin saying? Exactly what he said. We probably should not include a Hall of Fame coach. And it's not going to be a lot of years before he gets in. What is it, 5 years you got to get voted in? Mike's not going to be sitting on the beach waiting to be voted into the Hall of Fame. Either is Sean Payton and either is Andy Reid. Mike was saying exactly what he said. Come on now. Mike Tomlin, a college job in the Pac-12? He's right.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
So the Lakers won last night overtime against the bad Spurs team, and it's been kind of interesting that, you know, Russell Westbrook is somebody like a Baker Mayfield where I'm viewed as somebody that's highly critical of him. I do believe I've been right on both, but that's not really the goal here. The goal is context and providing what I think is something to make you think. It makes me think. We've gotten through 4 Laker games this year. You've really gotten the entire Westbrook experience. A lot of assists, a lot of turnovers. He's second most turnovers in the league. Last night, you had a 33-point game. You had game one where he couldn't shoot. You're getting all of it. His game doesn't have a ton of nuance. It's a lot of energy and speed. If he's hitting his, you know, layups and balls that are, you know, makeable shots for him, not threes, not long jumpers, then he has good nights. I've always used this. The analogy I would use with Westbrook, he's a little bit like the loudest, flashiest guy in a room, maybe in a lounge, gets the most attention, and people without discernment are impressed. But in the end, if you're still arguing that he's more impactful than Chris Paul or Steph Curry or Damian Lillard, you're impressed by that guy with a flashy shirt and that's loud. And I think every player in the NBA and in football has a comfort zone. Games in which they feel the most comfortable. For Kirk Cousins, the Minnesota Viking quarterback, it's that 1 p.m. window on Sunday against Detroit, a 500 team. It's never Sunday night football. It's never Monday night football. It's not a playoff game. And for Westbrook, a Tuesday night against the Spurs, LeBron's out, play 35 minutes, he's incredibly comfortable. You're going to get 15 games like last night for Westbrook. And he gives you everything. I mean, with this, so far in this season, we've gotten exactly everything from Westbrook. He was averaging literally 5 turnovers a game entering last night. He was shooting 9% from three-point land entering last night. You get the gamut with him. The game didn't have a lot of nuance. That's why at 32 he feels kind of washed. And at 33, Steph Curry, whose game has a ton of nuance. LeBron James at 37, 38, his game has a ton of nuance. They age better. It's almost like in golf, there's the guy that's long off the tee, the John Daly, can't really putt, not good with his irons. He gets a lot of attention. You know, he'll win some tournaments, but in the end, he doesn't age well because there's no refinement. You know, the game is rough. Westbrook's game is rough, and I think his comfort zone are these games like last night when you just can let him go. It's an average opponent, play a bunch of minutes, and he feels free. LeBron's not on the floor. He gets the ball. He can control it. You're not going to get those in playoff games. It's not a criticism of Westbrook. It's not about being right with Westbrook. But I think what you've seen in only 4 games with the Lakers so far, 4 or 5 games, you've seen the entire Westbrook experience. Get used to this. There'll be these nights where, like, woo, like 33 points in 28 minutes. You're going to get these. And then you get to get the games like game one where you honestly, You cannot believe how bad of a shooter is. You'll get all of it. You'll always get energy. You'll always get minutes. And that's why the Lakers brought him in. It wasn't for postseason excellence. They're going to go to AD and LeBron in those spots. That's not, even Rondo can be important in those spots. That's not why you brought him here.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
Hey, it's me, Rob Parker. Check out my weekly MLB podcast, Inside the Parker, for 22 minutes of piping hot baseball talk featuring the biggest names and newsmakers in the sport. Whether you believe in analytics or the eye test, we've got all the bases covered. New episodes drop every Thursday, so do yourself a favor and listen to Inside the Parker with Rob Parker on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Anytime anybody gets defensive about something, it means you're right over the target. You've landed. People don't get defensive. Nobody goes up to George Clooney and says, "You're ugly." And Clooney's like, "Hey, what do you mean?" It doesn't land. When people get defensive, like Cleveland Brown fans about Baker, it means you're on to something. Baker Mayfield wants to play this weekend. I don't blame him. Because Case Keenum came out and beat Denver and looked good. And then Jedrick Wills, the left tackle, had to almost apologize for saying this after the win.
"We didn't feel any drop-off. Case is a veteran guy who's played in multiple, he's probably played in more games than I have my whole career, you know what I'm saying? So there's no drop off. Everything felt very smooth. Ran the offense smooth. Everything was fine."
It's not exactly what you want between starter and backup. There's no real difference. Jedrick Wills had to backtrack because people are getting a little defensive in Cleveland. I don't blame Baker Mayfield. Okay, we know what's going to happen here. If Case Keenum, and Baker's not healthy, and Baker probably shouldn't play, and I said this last week, you can do whatever you want. You can play him through the injury, you cannot, but there's not a huge drop-off. The betting market here sees about a 1.5-point drop-off. I think Cleveland wins this weekend. They win with Baker, I think they win with Case. So there's an argument to be made, just get Baker healthier. If you can win, now, maybe in Cincinnati on the road, maybe you're like, I'll play with a hurt Baker. But I think Cleveland wins this weekend, and I think they win with Baker or Case. But you do see what's going to happen is that if Case wins over Pittsburgh, he is 2-0. And then Baker could come back and would face the best Cincinnati Bengals team in 20 years at Cincinnati. And Joe Burrow's on fire and Joe Burrow's weapons are all healthy. And if Burrow beats Baker, we're going to have a conversation. You can tell when you're right, when you've landed the punch. Because people get defensive. And Jedrick Wills is like, I didn't mean that. What I meant, it landed. And it's going to really land if Case plays this weekend and wins. And what's interesting is, I think Baker's smart enough to see, this is a winnable game for us. Last time we played him, we moved the ball up and down. The problematic part for Baker is, the next two games after this, if Case goes 2-0, are at Cincinnati. Oh, that's the best Cincinnati's played in 20 years. And then at New England. And Mac Jones' last 10 quarters, it's been pretty good. Second half against Houston, four quarters against Dallas, four quarters against the Jets. Mac Jones, those are his best 10 quarters. So then you go up against Belichick and a hot Mac Jones. You go to Cincinnati and a hot Joe Burrow. And Case goes 2-0 and you go 0-2. You think that's going to be a topic? Of course it's going to be a topic. So, you know, and then you have your left tackle saying it's not a big drop-off, and the betting market's not seeing a big drop-off. Don't get defensive about it. You're defensive about it because, you know, here it comes. So I think, you know, Baker's like, get me out there against Pittsburgh. Because that at Cincinnati and at New England, yeah, last year, you win those games. November? I'm not sure.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
I think it's really important in America that once you introduce tech or artificial intelligence, there is no going back. There's too much money in it. So a government has to have certain regulations in place about how much tech we introduce and how much artificial intelligence. I'm a capitalist all the way, beginning, end, middle. But we need an economy where farming and manufacturing and law and banking and retail and education are also vibrant. Not just tech, where people in tech make all the money. My kid's a tech savant. But it's not going to be a good life or a good country if only people who are coders get rich and everybody else is rubbing nickels together. Is that it is important in football similarly that you should be able to win more than one way. It can't be just the six teams that have great quarterbacks. Physical play matters, running games. And we've gotten to a very interesting point, and I want to discuss this because right now in the NFL standings this morning, I saw something that I thought was rather disturbing, and I wonder if you have noticed it. In 2017, we had four helpless teams, and that's about the league average my entire life. And I would say helpless is four wins or less. In 2017, there were four of those. And in 2018, there were four of those. And in 2019, there were four of those. And then last year, it crept up to six. And this morning, there are 8 to 9. We ain't halfway through the season. This is a disturbing trend. Tom Brady, I had a great privilege to talk to him this weekend, and Brady has been thinking about this. And why it's important is because Tom is benefiting from what is happening to the league. He's not a critic of it because it punishes him. He's actually extending his career. Because the league now is putting such an emphasis and a protective shield around quarterbacks, there's only one way to win. Folks, the average margin of victory last weekend was a disturbing 19.7 points. That not a single football team in the National Football League that is a 7-point dog or more has won a game. What about the farmers and the manufacturers and the teachers? What about defense and physical play and running games and being able, like Dave Wannstedt did, to get Jay Feely to the playoffs? Brady talked about that when I asked him if you could make one change in the NFL, rules, CBA, anything, and he talked about what he sees as a disturbing trend.
The game that I played 20 years ago is very different than the game now, in the sense that now it's more skills competition than it is physical football. I think in some ways they're taking away a physical element to the game that was the only way at one point to beat skill was to be tough. And when we played the Pittsburgh Steelers, they were tough. And when we played the teams that were just skillful, we won. And I think what's happening now is the way the rules are being set, I don't think that it's always in the best interests of the game that I once played.
Exactly. We don't want Canadian football. We don't want college football with 20-point blowouts. College football is its own entity. But I love the fact that one of the greatest, smartest players, not just greatest, Tom Brady, arguably the greatest, is seeing it too. You've got to allow teams that don't have Aaron Rodgers and Kyler Murray, you've got to allow them to win too. I looked this morning. There were eight teams that I literally felt hopeless about. I didn't count Seattle, although with Geno, they feel like it. They couldn't beat a marginal New Orleans team. They, little after a touchdown early, couldn't move the ball. Like, football's at its best when there's a lot of ways to win. America's at its best when there's a lot of ways to provide a great life for your family. I'm off my soapbox. All right, and with that, we bring in a man that needs no soapbox. We spar. We go into the octagon every week. Joel Klatt, the voice of college football for Fox Sports. All right, my man. Little soapbox there.
No, I appreciated it and really enjoyed it. That was very good. That was very good.
Thank you for tolerating that, Joy. Sometimes I get into my social
I thought it was
space.
Very insightful, Colin.
Okay. All right, so let's
– I mean, you basically just regurgitated what Brady said, but still very insightful.
So here's what's interesting. You and I are, a lot of these people in the media, and I'd like to say, first and foremost, I am fortunately am part of the media, though I don't consider myself anything more than America's honesty broker. But nonetheless, you and I have supported Harbaugh. He's a little disappointing to us, sure, but he's won 72% of his games. Lloyd Carr won like 74%.
Yeah, right around there.
Shem Beckler, 77, 78. But it's interesting. I said to you this morning, I said, okay, he's 2-12 against top 10 teams. Mm-hmm. All right, that's not great. And he can't beat Ohio State. Eh, whatever. I said, but he's 3-3 against Michigan State. I said, if you just took those three and he was 6-0 against Michigan State, he'd have something to grab onto. And you said, oh, no, no. I'm going to distill it down to a game.
Yeah.
And this, I think, is fascinating. Take the floor.
I think that with Harbaugh, and this is not an excuse, because I'll be the first one to tell you that, like, it's been under what I think we expected. I thought at this point they would be on more equal footing with Ohio State. Okay, so I believe that Jim has underperformed at Michigan.
I do too. Fair.
To be fair, right. Now, having said that, you can distill down the quote-unquote disappointment of Jim at Michigan to two snaps of the football, maybe even one snap of the football. Not year, not game, snap of the football.
This is fascinating.
If you go back to the punt that turned into a fumble, that turned into a touchdown for Michigan State in the last, you know, what is it, 5 seconds of the game. In that year, if they just kick the ball away and win the game, they win the division and go to the Big Ten Championship, likely win the championship and go to the playoff.
He would have a playoff.
You could have a playoff berth, Big Ten Championship, and he would be not even just 6-0, 4-2 against Michigan State. You can literally boil it down. Now, if you go one more snap of the football the same year, in which he got a, I think, still, and a lot of people agree with me, a really bad spot against Ohio State.
Wait,
I've told this to Urban Meyer, no, right to his face.
A terrible spot. Everybody except Buckeyes knows they got jobbed on that spot.
It's a fourth down play. Yes. For whatever reason, the other network did not have a camera down the line. I still have no idea how that happens in a game that big with the amount of equipment that they have. But JT Barrett, in my mind, was probably short of that fourth down. If that is called correctly, Michigan not only beats Ohio State, but again, win the division, likely win the Big Ten, and go to the playoff. So two snaps of the football would completely change the narrative. And yet, I will stand by what I said to begin this, which is Jim has underperformed to the point of what I thought he was going to do. We sat on the desk together. We did a pregame show before the Thursday night game, his first of his career at Michigan as a head coach.
Yeah.
They were about to play Utah, Kyle Whittingham's Utah team. And we sat on the desk, and the conversation was, I remember it vividly, how long until Michigan's a top 10 team? And I thought to myself, they could probably do it sometime this year, maybe next. And you thought I was crazy. You were like, what? They did it that year. They got into that mode. They were winning 10 games. The next year, they were winning 10 games. He has done a lot of really good things, returned Michigan to a place where they can talk about things at the upper echelon, which they could not do under Rich Rod or Brady Hoke. But having said that, it really boils down to the games against Michigan State. And that's why this week is so fascinating, is because here he is again, undefeated, and yet it feels like the fan base is ready for the shoe to drop in Michigan, whereas at Michigan State, they are just wildly excited about what Mel has built in such a short time.
Think about this. If he wins this weekend, and they're favored, and I think they will close, they'll win close. I don't think Michigan's offense is built to take advantage of Michigan State's weakness, which is their secondary. So I think it'll be a close game, but Michigan will win. But it's interesting, if he won this weekend, if you just change that snap, he is then 5-2 against Michigan State. He is go to a playoff. He wins a conference championship.
It's totally different.
We say this all the time. Life is there have been so, situationally, I mean,
the Brady Tuck rule. I mean, you go back to just individual snaps of the football throughout history,
Pete
and it Carroll changes everything.
Is two plays from a second national title and a second Super Bowl.
That's right.
I mean an inch.
That's right.
Lendale White's an inch shy, or Vince Young never gets that ball back.
Well, and he should have learned his lesson out of the first one, is that the best player on the planet in college football wasn't on the field on that fourth down play against Texas. Reggie Bush wasn't. Whether you give it to him or not, he's not on the field to influence the defense. And Marshawn Lynch doesn't touch the ball on that goal line snap. He should have learned his lesson out of that college game.
Let me throw this at you. You set 44 school records as Colorado's starting. You did. You set 44. Now, at that point, it was an intramural program. But
oh,
nonetheless,
was it? That's right. That's right.
It was a smaller program.
We used to run the option, Colin. That's how you set records.
Okay, but it was funny. I watched Kenny Pickett this weekend.
Yeah.
Okay, so he's the Pitt quarterback. Now, he's kind of a beer-drinking, good-looking kid, easy thrower.
Yes.
He's been there forever. I swear to God, he's there for the hot lunch program.
That's
he's been
right.
there for like 12 years. Is he? I watched him, and I wanted to watch him against Clemson because Clemson's a little down.
But their defense is still good.
Their defense is still good, but I watched him. What is your interpretation of what he becomes? What do you see with him? Because he is an easy thrower.
I see a lot of – now, different stylistically.
Yeah.
But I see a lot of these – hyper veteran college quarterbacks that end up figuring it out late in their college career and become really good NFL quarterbacks. Guys like Baker Mayfield, Jalen Hurts, Joe Burrow. There was one on Mac Jones. That's kind of, again, different stylistically than a lot of those guys, but he is making throws that he just didn't. And this speaks to the element of allowing young quarterbacks, young football players to grow and to evolve.
You know, it's just funny. As I watched him, I thought to myself, oh, yeah, he throws an NFL ball.
Right.
He's got the size. It looks like an NFL quarterback. And Pitt doesn't have great players, although they're playing pretty good football. But it wasn't because I watched him. I mean, he's mobile enough. He's got a Daniel Jones. He's mobile enough. He'll probably run a 4.75, 4.8. He's mobile enough.
But that's the mold I see him in. And we've seen this a lot over the last few years. Guys that are veteran college quarterbacks that figure it out late.
Yeah, it's very interesting because he's when I watched him, I really sat down for an hour. I'm like, I'm watching Kenny Pickett. And I thought, okay, he's an NFL quarterback. I just don't know if he's a backup or a starter.
So here's what's great about guys like Kenny Pickett or Mac Jones or Joe Burrow or Baker or these guys is that they can stick around the college game long enough to actually learn football and not just rely on their talent. And in a lot of these cases, they're not quite physically gifted enough just to rely on that and be a great player like Justin Fields or a Trevor Lawrence early. So they've got to figure out the schematics of the game. They've got to get in deep with the why, not just the how, of how to be successful on the football field. And because of that, they can go and they can translate that into success earlier in their pro career. I think Kenny's going to get a shot. He probably has played himself into the first round, maybe even high into the first round.
Yeah.
And he's going to be another one of these stories. You know, it's Joe Burrow. It's Mac Jones. Now it's going to be Kenny Pickett.
You know what I thought? Because he's not flashy. You know what I thought? He's going to go about 12th to 15th. What does that mean? Like Mac Jones? Pretty good football team.
A decent football team. That's where you want to be drafted.
Yeah, I thought this is the kind of guy that drops to 16 and ends up going to a team like that's kind of ready to go. That's kind of got pieces. Okay, so I'm going to throw a couple things out there. This is very interesting. Because of my labyrinth of sources in the industry, I heard that James Franklin at Penn State, who had a brutal loss against Illinois, not great, he changed agents.
In the summer.
Okay, in the summer. Okay. My sources were late, apparently. The point is this. I had two people text me, and they're like, oh, you can't hire him for the USC job after that. And I'm like, oh, give me a break. People lose. I mean, Pete Carroll lost to Oregon State up in Corvallis. What is the temperature on James Franklin, Penn State, USC today, in your opinion?
I have heard that the temperature is quite warm for him, both at USC and potentially at LSU. Because of his success in the SEC footprint,
right,
when he took a Vanderbilt program that was nothing and ended up being a very good to strong program in the SEC. I know that he's not going to want to talk about that, and he talks about not being distracted, although this week in his press conference preparing for Ohio State, he said, I'm just trying to get ready for Illinois in the Big House, which, of course, you're getting ready for the Buckeyes in the Horseshoe. But nevertheless, I don't think that the agent thing is a big deal. I think that this was blown out of proportion in terms of when it was reported. To what I believe is that he changed this agent in the summer, and it was unrelated to all of these coaching changes before USC or LSU even came up. Now, he's going to be on a short list of 3 to 4 on both of these lists. And so you're going to have to start diving in and looking under the microscope. Where does he want to be? Does he want to leave potentially and go to try it at one of these other programs? Does he feel like the ceiling has been hit at Penn State? I've been told that Matt Rhule is not all the way in on the NFL moving forward, and that he could potentially come back down to any number of these jobs.
So let's segue to the Mike Tomlin said, forget it, I'm not going to USC.
What a good answer. That was amazing.
That was the best. But it does lead to this, and Joy may have said, somebody said this to me, and I can't remember who it was. They said, you know, Mike Tomlin made it look like a small job, like it's Cal State Fullerton baseball. And it was like, to me, is USC unrealistic? USC's talking Tomlin, and they're going to call McVay. And then I think to myself, shouldn't they just go get a college coach? I mean, are they going too big? Do you think USC, Tomlin saying that, his opinion is a realistic opinion, like college football at the Pac-12, this is not the job it used to be.
I'll be the first one to say, like, if I had a conversation with Mike Bone, the athletic director at USC today, I would tell him, swing as big as you possibly can. Now, some of those might be out of your range. I think Mike Tomlin's probably one of those because of the job that he has, right? He's at an organization that will give you patience, that will be real. You know, they look at you with clear eyes. They don't have unrealistic expectations year to year. It's an organization that has had three coaches over the course of basically two generations.
Yeah.
So I think that it's more about the job that he has, and he articulated that beautifully. I love Mike Tomlin and his answer to that question. Having said that, though, USC should swing as big as they possibly can. Now, I think it has more to do with fit and style than it does with anything else. They need somebody that understands how to be big and yet also small enough to allow his own players to be stars, because that's how you have success at USC. Now
that feels like James Franklin to me.
Could be.
That's what it feels like to me.
It could be. I don't think it sounds like Luke Fickell.
No.
I think Luke Fickell fits really well at, let's just say, for sake of argument, these jobs pop open. I'm not saying that they will. Let's say, for sake of argument, Michigan State or Penn State or, you know, a Big Ten job. Luke Fickell is kind of your man at that point.
Yes.
Matt Campbell is your man. But those, I don't know if those two guys are cut out or
That's
cut
right.
from the cloth that would succeed at USC, because you need that NFL-style DNA. And what I mean by that is that you've got to be comfortable enough in your own skin for your quarterback to be a bigger star than you are. And that's the type of coach that you need at USC.
Okay, let's go to Klatt's top 10. Now, before I see it, I hope you don't have Cincinnati up there.
I do not. You might be happy where I have them. I've got Cincinnati at number 8.
Thank you. Finally, I gotta, you know, I'm usually I feel like this is almost teacher student, but in this instance, you are really making me very happy, because
well, and here's
this
the
is
the reason behind Cincinnati.
This is
mind.
Exactly where they should be.
The reason behind Cincinnati, I love what they're doing, but the problem is that I am a big conference snob. All right.
Yeah.
I'm just unapologetically so. It's much tougher to go through even a Pac-12 or even ACC schedule than it is to go through the Group of Five schedule like Cincinnati is. So the burden of proof is on you.
Thank you.
It's not enough to just win. So when you do what you did against Navy, albeit against a triple option, albeit on the road, you can't be sitting there having to get an interception after they got an onside kick in a one possession game. I'm sorry, that's not afforded you. I also dropped Oklahoma because you can't go to Kansas and be in a dogfight with Kansas like they were in that game. That's why I moved it around.
Yeah.
And by the way, people are like, oh, you can't believe you did what you did with Ohio State. There is a clear mark between number 3 and everybody else. I've got Georgia, Ohio State, Alabama.
I totally agree.
And I toyed with who's better, Alabama, Ohio State. I'm not sure. And I kind of slotted it this way. And here's the reason. I've got Ohio State number 2 because in the last 4 games, their defense, which was their Achilles heel, is the number 2 scoring defense in the country behind Georgia and the number 2 yards per play defense behind Georgia. They're averaging over 50 points per game. C.J. Stroud, since he came back from that injury, he's thrown for over 300 yards, 14 touchdowns, no interceptions. Watch out for Ohio State. Sneaky C.J. Stroud might win the Heisman Trophy, and this might be the team that ends up playing the SEC champion in the national championship game.
Finally. It's nothing against since. No, I mean, listen, a lot of these a lot of these college football guys, they feel guilty.
Well, I did feel guilty about that. I want
moving Cincinnati to 8.
The one I feel most guilty about is Oregon. I know that they're not better than Ohio State, and yet they beat them. And at the end, I will give them the benefit of the doubt because of that. They have earned the right to be ranked higher than Ohio State.
They can't
when
throw
push
the ball.
Comes to shove.
They can't throw
Anthony the Brown had his best game of his life, really, against UCLA last week.
Ew.
But Oregon scares me a little bit in a conference that's schizophrenic, and anybody can beat anybody on any given Saturday,
right,
except for Arizona and Colorado.
Yeah. All right, Clat, you know what? We're going to end it right there. I thought you did your homework assignment. You came in.
It was a homework assignment?
You handed me an apple on the teacher's desk. I really feel you delivered today. And you,
going with academic analogies, we're going to have to talk about the plagiarism of that take from Tom Brady.
That's a good point. I just move off that one. It never happened.